Let's face it, people have different sleep needs. While you love your partner, sleeping next to them might not always be the most comfortable. Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs, so you can choose what's right for each of you whenever you like. Maybe you prefer a firmer mattress and your partner needs something softer. Because of the individualized comfort that you get from Sleep Number Smart Beds, you and your partner will sleep better together. All Sleep Number Smart Beds feature cooling, pressure-relieving comfort layers for soothing sleep throughout the night. And their temperature balancing bedding is designed to move heat and moisture away when you're hot. When you're cool, they hold their energy to help warm you. The smart beds even automatically respond and adjust to your movements, so you sleep comfortably all night long. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply. CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure, with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Welcome to the Science of Success. Introducing your host, Matt Bodner.
Welcome to the Science of Success, the number one evidence-based growth podcast on the internet, with more than 1 million downloads and listeners in over 100 countries. In this episode, we discuss the groundbreaking research behind the ancient molecule that fuels peak performance, the foundations of neuroeconomics, how our brains react during social interactions. We examine how our brains are designed to connect and built to work cooperatively. We dig into the power of oxytocin and how you can increase it in your life, and much more with Dr. Paul Zak. I'm going to give you 3 reasons why you should join our email list today by going to successpodcast.com and signing up right on the homepage. First, you're going to get an awesome free guide that we created based on listener demand. This is our most popular guide. It's called How to Organize and Remember Everything. You can get it completely for free, along with another sweet surprise bonus guide when you sign up today by joining the email list. Next, you're going to get a curated weekly email from us every single Monday called Mindset Monday. Listeners have been absolutely loving this email. It's simple, it's short, it's a few things every single week that we find interesting and exciting. Lastly, you're going to get a listener exclusive chance to shape the show, vote on guests, vote on and submit questions to our guests. In fact, we've got an interview coming up this week where we had listeners submit questions, and we're going to be asking those questions and calling specific listeners out that gave us those questions. You get to vote on new intro music, changing all kinds of pieces of the show. It's an awesome chance to shape the podcast. So be sure to sign up for the email list. All 3 of those reasons are great reasons to join the email list today. Just go to successpodcast.com and sign up right on the homepage, or just text the word SMARTER to the number 44222, that's SMARTER, to the number 44222. In our previous episode, we discussed how to use mind control techniques to create any habit you want, why we're driven much more by pain than pleasure. We looked at the hook model for describing human behavior, talked about how to hack your rewards to change your behavior, and the power of tiny amounts of friction, and much more with our guest Nir Eyal. If you want to hack your behavior to make or break any habit, listen to that episode. Today, we have another exciting guest on the show, Dr. Paul Zak. Paul is the founding director of the Center for Neuroeconomics Studies and a professor of economics, psychology, and management at Claremont Graduate University. He was also among the team of scientists who were the first to use brain imaging to identify the role of oxytocin as a key driver of trust, love, and morality that distinguishes our humanity. Paul's the author of the new book, Trust Factor, The Science of Creating High-Performance Companies, and has appeared on ABC World News, CNN, Fox Business, and more. Paul, welcome to The Science of Success.
Matt Bodnar, great to be on with you.
Well, we're super excited to have you on today. So for listeners who may not be familiar with you and your background, I'd love to go back and start with kind of your story and some of the early experiments that you did that really uncovered the power and the role of oxytocin.
Sure. So I'm a very confused person. I have spanned both economics and neuroscience in both my training and my research, helped start this field called neuroeconomics that we could talk about a bit. Anyway, one of the kind of deep questions that I've been studying for, almost 20 years now is the role of interpersonal trust in explaining why countries perform better, why companies perform better, why individuals have more friends, are happier. So as part of this quest, I was looking for a signal in the brain that would tell us essentially why we can live around strangers all the time. So if we think of our closest genetic relatives, chimpanzees, they don't like other members of their species they don't know. I just came back from Atlanta a couple of days ago, and I spent 6 hours in a metal tube with 150 other humans being bounced around. You know, you put chimpanzees in a metal tube, don't even bounce them, just put a metal tube and you see, fur and blood would be all over the floor. So how do we do that, right? How do we get a sense that you, Matt, wonderful human being, fun to hang out with you, and your producer, Austin, clearly a sketchy dude, don't want to be around him, right? We have to have something in our heads that say, Matt safe, Austin not so much, right? Otherwise, we can't live in New York City or any big place where we don't know people all the time. So basically, the punchline is the secret to my success has been to read research in animals and figure out a way to apply that to humans. So we began running experiments in which we could have people share money with each other. And that money would grow if they shared it, but then they would lose control over it. And in animals, it had been shown that when an animal encounters another member of a species that it recognizes, usually by smell. Think of this in a burrow. So I run into Matt in a burrow, and I sniff, and I can say, oh, that's Matt. I know him. He's awesome. And so my brain makes this chemical oxytocin, and it motivates me to affiliate with you so we can huddle up and stay warm. We can protect each other. We can hang out. We can dig in the burrow, whatever we're doing. And then if I smell an Austin coming in, then I'm like, oh, no, fear response, aggression. I've got to battle this guy. So it turns out that the same signal works in humans. In fact, it works in overdrive in humans, that when someone intentionally trusts us or more generally shows us a kindness, our brains make this chemical, oxytocin, and it motivates us to invest effort into helping that person. So if you think about this from an evolutionary perspective, the cost and benefit of being around strangers are not always clear. So the cost of being around a stranger is that person might hurt me, might steal from me, it could be dangerous. But the benefit is that I might find a project to do with him or her, or I might be romantically attracted to that person, or I might have that person join my circle of friends. So our brains are constantly balancing the benefits that come with building more social relationships with the cost of having the wrong person or people in those relationships. And so oxytocin seems to be a key part of that signaling mechanism in the brain.
I love the focus on looking at the animal kingdom and trying to understand, how do these parallels play out in human behavior? One of the things that we talk about all the time on the show is how evolution has shaped the human brain. And, it's done a lot of good, but it's also baked in these cognitive biases and traps that we fall into. Tell me a little bit more about how that, how that drove your research.
Yeah, I guess the major focus of my research in the last 20 years has been, I just tell you that in a second, but I was just at this Association for Talent Development, big HR meeting in Atlanta, and I gave a keynote there, and I started out by saying, none of us will be ever out of a job because the humans are complicated. And so, my talk was about how to understand some of that complication. And so by complicated, I mean that if we run an experiment and we have people do a particular task and you put 20 people doing that task, you'll get 15 different brain responses, not just behaviors, but brain responses. So as you sort of suggested, Matt, the selection pressure for higher cognitive abilities evolutionarily has been very weak. And so we see high variation in how people respond to different environments. And those manifest as cognitive biases, the use of heuristics. You know, our brains live in this soup of chemicals, none of which we're aware of consciously, right? So a lot of the work we've done changes that chemical soup, and then we can map out how that changes responses to a particular choice. And I do think choice is an interesting place to focus on because, you know, eventually all the information you take in, not all of it, but a lot of it, you know, boils down to doing something with it, which ends up being a choice. So much of my work is focused on where that variation in decisions comes from. And, you know, they're sort of trivial variations, male, female, young, old, but they're also super interesting, weird variations. Like I test you, Matt, today, and then I test you a week later to do the same thing, and your brain and your behavior are totally different. And so I want to know why that's the case.
I think that's another really important point, which is that this chemical soup, as you called it, or soup of chemicals, is something that's taking place in our brains that we are not consciously aware of.
And yet, because our brains produce language, there's this expectation that we have some kind of insight into the brain's inner workings. In fact, when we run experiments, so we always ask people, why did you do this? Do you think this was an interesting choice? Well, you know, and you know, the whole reason we started measuring brain activity, honestly, was because people's modal response to most experimental stimuli was, I don't know why I did this. Well, it's pretty hard to build a theory of human behavior on, I don't know. But on the other hand, you know, it's like, having you eat a hamburger and saying, you know, asking your liver, you know, how it's processing that beef. Your liver can't tell you. And honestly, your brain can't really tell you. I can force you to say something to me because I know you can create some language. Doesn't mean it has any insight into what is going on. So most of what your brain does, perhaps 99%, is in fact unconscious. And there's a good reason for that that we could talk about. So we're just not aware of what we're doing. And that's okay. It just means that people are complicated.
So let's bring this back. Tell me about, you mentioned some of the early experiments that you did with trust and with money. What were the results of that? And what did that teach you about oxytocin?
Right. So in humans, prior to the experiments we started running around 2002, the brain was only known to make oxytocin when humans gave birth, breastfed, or had sex. So all three of those activities are way too messy for me to run in my lab. I don't want to get involved. So based on the animal literature, we thought that if someone intentionally trusts you, your brain would produce oxytocin, maybe, and maybe that oxytocin would affect your behavior. In fact, that's what we found. We found that the more someone intentionally trusts you with money, but with other stuff we've shown subsequently, the more your brain produces oxytocin, which is a very rapid signal in the brain, has about a 3-minute half-life, so it's like a quick on-off switch. It says, oh, this guy's cool. He wants to play nice. I'll make this chemical. And oxytocin predicted how much money people would reciprocate to someone who trusted them. So it's not only that we respond to positive overtures from strangers, it's that this chemical motivates us to engage with them in a cooperative way. So I think of oxytocin as the biological basis for the golden rule. If you play nice with me, most of the time I'm going to play nice with you. And of course, most of the time is where the rubber hits the road. We spent about 10 years classifying the factors that inhibit or promote oxytocin release. And we really, really know this because we also developed a way to shoot synthetic oxytocin into living human brains safely. And in that case, we can radically increase the amount of trust, generosity, cooperation that people have.
So tell me about some of these factors that inhibit or promote oxytocin release.
Well, let's talk about your producer, Austin. Why is he a sketchy guy? Because he's a young alpha male. Well, I'm looking at his picture right now. Look at that guy. He's a specimen. And so he's got very high testosterone, and testosterone has been shown to inhibit oxytocin synthesis. And indeed, when we run experiments where we give men synthetic oxytocin, we create a bunch of Austins, and sure enough, they are more self-focused, They are more entitled. They demand more from others. They offer less to others. So it's all about them. And I can tell you a nice evolutionary story on why between 15 and 25, young males should be aggressive and think only about themselves. And but nonetheless, that's the factor. So, you know, you have pretty reliable markers for testosterone levels, hairiness, deep voice, long chin. But we don't know second to second how much testosterone is in our system because, like every other neurochemical system in the body, it's adapting, second by second to help us survive and reproduce. Other factors we find in women, estrogen levels, which vary twice over the course of a month over a woman's menstrual cycle. Estrogen increases the uptake of oxytocin. So for listeners who are female or who have girlfriends or wives, when you go to the movies with them and every once in a while, for seemingly no reason, they cry at the Bambi movie, it could be that they're just more sensitive to oxytocin, which increases our sense of empathy and caring. And that may be driven by changes in estrogen levels. Progesterone, which increases when women are ovulating or pregnant, inhibits the action of oxytocin. So there's a whole high stress inhibits oxytocin release. So again, normally I maybe want to affiliate and meet with Matt and hang out. But if I'm under high stress, then I'm in survival mode and I'm less interested in hanging out with new people and more interested in getting through the next 10 minutes. So a whole variety of factors that we've been able to characterize affect the way we are. And again, I may run into you on the street, Matt, and not know that you're super stressed out and you treat me like a jerk. And I say, oh, Matt's a real jerk. And what I didn't know was that your dog just died or you just got in a car accident or, you know, something stressful really happened to you and you're just having a bad day. So I think for listeners, the punchline I've learned for doing this for 20 years is that not only are people complicated, but it's important to have a lot of acceptance for the degree of complication that the people around us aren't even aware they're giving off. So we're complicated and we're unaware that we're complicated. So I think the only way to go through life is just to be accepting and just to say, hey, it's not that Matt's a bad guy. He might have just had a bad day or a bad week, and that's okay. I don't want to rule him out from ever interacting with him. You know, there may be a lot of good things that I could do with Matt. So I've become much more accepting and tolerant of people around me. So how about that?
So if I'm somebody that cries all the time at a movie, does that mean that I have a higher sensitivity to oxytocin or that I have higher sort of natural oxytocin levels?
Yeah, so oxytocin is really an on-off switch. So it's not a level response. It's a change from baseline. I'll tell you something embarrassing about myself. So I'm going to answer that question with a story. We've done a lot of work on persuasion and storytelling. And I know you've worked a lot in marketing, Matt, so we could talk about that. We started doing this work because I was on an airplane coming home from Washington, D.C. And my kids were little. I had two little girls. And I was tired. And I couldn't work because it was turbulent. And so I was watching Million Dollar Baby, this Clint Eastwood movie, which I had never seen. And it's a father-daughter story, has a very sad ending. And the next thing I know, the guy next to me on the plane's poking me, saying, sir, do you need some help? Is something wrong with you? I mean, not only was I crying, I like every orifice in my face was shooting out goo. It was really embarrassing. And when I got back to my lab, I mentioned that to some of the people I work with. And I said, you know, I was cognitively intact. Maybe I was a little tired or lonely, but, you know, I knew where I was. I knew this is a fictional story. And yet I was so absorbed in that story that I couldn't help but cry at the movies. And it turns out, since I had children, I've become much more of a movie crier. And there's a reason for that. As you age, your testosterone goes down, so the relative effect of oxytocin goes up. When you have, when you're a committed relationship, your testosterone falls. When you have children, your testosterone falls. And I don't have data for this, but in my personal experience, if you have girl children, you pick out little dresses every day of your life, your testosterone goes to zero, you become a big girly man. So again, there's probably a good adaptive story evolutionarily on why that's the case. And for the guys listening, if you are in a relationship or have children or have girl children, don't worry. All of us men have this high octane version of testosterone, which has the initials DHT, has a long name behind it. And DHT you can turn on in a second. So I'm making a joke because I'm 6'4", 205. I'm not a girly man, but I am very sensitive now because I've had kids. I wasn't before I had kids. But if you want to mix it up with me, I'm happy to do that. Like, I can turn on the DHT, you know, like nobody's business. So anyway, I'm kind of making jokes here, but it does mean that our brains are helping us adapt to the environment we're in. And part of that's the social environment. So again, if you're around children, if you're around women, and you need to be more sensitive, a lot more oxytocin, and less sort of testosterone driven, your brain will adapt to that. And these systems are very adaptive, even in adults. And so the more able you are to connect to people, the more you release oxytocin, the more you are in tune with the emotional state of people around you, which is also a very effective tool to have. So I don't know about you guys who are young, Matt and Austin, but you know, when I was, I don't know, under 30, I couldn't tell you the emotion of anybody around me. I didn't really care. I was just like driving 1,000 miles an hour in everything that I did. And now I'm much more socially aware, and I think I'm a better social creature to people around me. And so anyway, it's a skill you can develop. And if a big stupid jock like me can do it, then you guys certainly can do it.
I think you may be the first guest to challenge the listeners to a fight, which I think is pretty funny.
I'm ready, man. Come on. So I like, Matt, that you talked in your blog about performance. So I think one of the most interesting things, I'm cutting you off, I'm sorry, but you know, I love high performance. I mean, I think that's a lot of the current work I'm doing is really focusing on how do we get people in groups to perform at their highest levels. And I think it's a really interesting and hard problem. So I don't know if you want to go there, but maybe that's the pitch for why, you know, I'm still a, like all of us who are men, you know, we're still kind of like 18-year-old doofuses because we just want to do super cool stuff all the time, right? Let's be honest. Women too. There's a lot of women who are really high performers. Sorry, I don't mean to be sexist there, but I don't know. I can't think of anything more interesting than, you know, knocking a baseball out of a park or, you know, jumping out of an airplane or I don't know. I just love that stuff.
Well, I definitely want to dig into that. Before we do, I want to dig out a little bit more about oxytocin. So tell me, what are some things, you know, you mentioned kind of dosing people with oxytocin in your lab. What are some ways we can naturally increase our oxytocin levels? And, you know, is that something you would recommend or would you even recommend potentially trying to take oxytocin?
On the latter, I'd say no. So oxytocin is a prescription drug. You cannot get it without a prescription from a physician. There are, quote, homeopathic versions sold on the internet, which, of course, are just bogus. So don't waste your money buying Liquid Trust or some other company that claims that there's one part per bazillion of oxytocin. There's nothing in there that'll have an effect. In fact, you know, when we do experiments, we put about 2 teaspoons of oxytocin up your nose to get it into your brain. It turns out the nose is a good portal to the brain for weird physiologic reasons. So 2 teaspoons of fluid up your nose is not really pleasant. So yeah, so really for research only, there have been a number of clinical trials that have looked at oxytocin infusion for things like autism and schizophrenia. And basically the effects are really, really mild because the larger brain system that oxytocin activates is dysregulated or damaged in these patients. So taking oxytocin, not a good idea, but training yourself, training your brain to release more of it, probably a good idea because it will make you a better social creature. It'll make you more empathic to people around you, which means you can read this key source of information, which is their emotional state. So again, when I was 18 or 30 or something, I wasn't really good at reading people's emotional states. And I ran over people a lot. Like I, as you can tell, I talk fast, I have high energy, I move fast. And a lot of people, that's not an effective way to interact with them. And now that I'm a little older and the saying in psychology, all research is me search. So maybe I had issues and that's why I studied this, this chemical that makes us better social creatures. Yeah. But now I'm much more in tune with what people around me, how they're responding to me, how they are responding to their environment. So I've trained myself to be, to release more oxytocin. And I know that because I do a lot of experiments on myself because I have a lab. So some things you can do are, gosh, there's so many that we've shown experimentally, but one of my favorites is called listening with your eyes. So I'm actually looking at your picture, Matt, even though we're only on audio. So when I'm talking, I'm actually making eye contact with you. And so think next time you're with some friends or with your romantic partner, if you put down your phone, there were no screens in front of you, and you gave that person in front of you your full attention. So if you listen with your eyes, you're giving this person the gift of being fully present in that conversation. And we've shown that when you do this, you release oxytocin, that person becomes more in tune with you. dogs actually do this to us. Dogs make eye gaze and cause our brains to make oxytocin. So other things you can do include things like touch. So if people have ever seen my TED talk, you know, at the end of that, I give a person in the audience a hug. So I got outed as a hugger, and now I just hug everybody. I go into a business meeting, and if people want to shake hands, I say, hey, I hug everybody. I'm the connection guy. And boy, people's faces light up, and all of a sudden, now I've got a ton of information from you. It's almost an evil trick for listeners. You hug somebody, you get smell information, you get touch information, you invaded their space for, you know, 10 seconds or whatever, 5 seconds. It's a great way to accelerate the connection that you're trying to build with somebody. And what I do is I pre-announce. I just say I hug everybody. Maybe 1% of humans I've interacted with in the last 7 years will refuse the hug because they're socially anxious or they're super old or whatever. But everybody else is happy to get a hug. So yeah, touch really important. Sharing a meal, actually eating with another person will release oxytocin. So tons of things. I won't go through more, but you know, I certainly have a top 20 list I can go through.
No, I think those are some great resources. I love the evil trick of hugging people. I've even heard something sort of similar on a scaled down version, which is that you should never fist bump. You should always do a handshake because a handshake releases more oxytocin for both people and kind of forms a deeper connection.
I don't think that's ever been proved, but it presumably, you know, I love the, if you're shaking my hand, I'm going to do a two hand and I'm going to pull you in anyway. So here's the thing. I mean, it seems weird in a way like, oh, that's just a funky, weird dude in California. But in fact, our brains are designed to connect. We want to be connected. So, you know, we're really open to touch. Like when you played sports, like when you were younger, right? You know, I think the only place you can hit a guy in the butt and not get punched in the face is on a sports field, right? So there's a sense of teamwork that goes into or team building that goes into touch. So I want to just accelerate that process because, again, I'm interested in high performance. And anything I can do, any hack I can use to get the people's brains around me to connect better to me means we're going to form in a more effective team.
So let's dig into that now. Tell me, what has your research uncovered around how we can build more high performance teams?
Yeah, the short backstory on that, Matt, was that, as you know, we got a kind of fair amount of media attention around this work on trust and oxytocin because it was brand new. No one had shown this before. We developed protocols to measure oxytocin in humans and, as I said, infuse it into the brains. And eventually companies started coming to my lab saying, hey, we think trust is important in our organization. Could you tell us how to build trust? And my first response, because I'm a nerd, was, yeah, we have this protocol. I can draw blood from your employees and I'll measure their oxytocin. And, you know, these executive faces would turn white. They're like, there's no way you can take blood from our employees. And then I started thinking, gosh, if I'm such an expert on trust, how come I can't advise companies on what they can do to build trust? So we started running experiments in my lab on teams. We eventually got permission to actually go in and take blood from companies like Zappos and Herman Miller and measure brain activity and measure productivity, innovation. So we really got objective data on the conditions within organizations that allow them to build trust. And we showed that high trust organizations perform better using multiple measures. So then we went back and developed a tool and actually spun out a company called OFactor so that companies can measure and manage their culture for high trust and high performance. So now we have a survey that identifies or both measures organizational trust and identifies these 8 key building blocks that leaders can influence that create higher trust. And so the sort of punchline of that work is once I can measure trust within your organization, then you can manage it for high performance. If you can't measure, you can't manage. And because humans create culture whenever you put them in groups, if leaders of organizations don't manage their cultures, those cultures are going to manage them. So the humans are going to work out norms of behavior, and either you can let them go and just figure whatever it is, or you can manage that culture for high performance in a consistent way using the way our brains respond to each other. So I think, you know, thinking about people at work as brains at work, embodied brains, in which our brains are built to work cooperatively, you know, I want to use neuroscience again to optimize how I'm deploying resources and getting the most out of these individuals. And it turns out that people want to perform at high levels, almost everybody. And if you put them in a situation in which they can perform, which they have the freedom to execute as they see fit, when they get a lot of coaching so they can hit performance goals, and then are recognized when they achieve those goals, people dig it and they perform better. They stay at their jobs longer. They're happier. They're healthier. So that's the work I've done in the last 8 years or so. And it's fun for me because I get to work at scale now. So, you know, the clinical work we've done is really exciting. It's great to help patients, and it's very rewarding. But if we go into, you know, a company and we change their work life for the better for 10,000 people or 20,000 people, that's super exciting to me.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey. Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey. Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hiring the right person takes time, time that you often don't have. But you shouldn't let a time crunch get in the way of finding the right candidates for your business. That's why LinkedIn is the best place to post your job. In fact, I was on LinkedIn Jobs this morning looking for candidates to fill a key role in one of my businesses. LinkedIn Jobs screens candidates with hard and soft skills you're looking for so that you can hire the right person quickly. You can look for things like collaboration, creativity, and adaptability, looking beyond just work skills and resumes to connect you with the candidates who are a perfect match for your business. That's how LinkedIn makes sure that your job post gets in front of the people you actually want to hire, because they have a much better ability to get a deep insight into exactly who is the right candidate for you and your business. Find the right person meant for your business today with LinkedIn Jobs. You can pay what you want, and the first $50 is on them. Just visit linkedin.com/success. Again, that's linkedin.com/success to get $50 off your first job post. Terms and conditions apply.
I love that point that our brains are designed to connect with each other, and they're built naturally to work cooperatively.
Yeah. And if we don't inhibit that, it'll happen. And the question is, does it happen in a way that is sustaining? So I think, you know, if you remember like Econ 101, you know, we were sold this bill of goods from, I don't know, like the 19th century or something, that work provides disutility. The reason you have to pay people at work is because work sucks so much. But I know, Matt, that you dig what you do. I can tell because I read your bio and we chatted beforehand. You know, we're recording this on Memorial Day. I'm all about, you know, doing cool stuff. I don't care if it's Memorial Day. I want to talk to you. I think it's awesome. So, you know, why am I, quote, working on a holiday? Because it's not work for me. It's the coolest thing on the planet to measure brain activity, for me, to measure brain activity and use that to solve real problems that humans have. So yeah, if you understand that we're set up to work in teams, or we've done this for eons, don't screw it up. You know, try to create an environment where people can really deploy that passion, that energy in an effective way. So, by the way, in my new book, Trust Factor, as you mentioned, there's a ton of Peter Drucker in there. So I was on the faculty with Peter Drucker at Claremont Graduate University for 10 years before he passed away. And Peter really influenced me. And Peter was all over this stuff, like in the 50s and 60s. And it's really about empowering the humans within an organization to be their best selves in groups, to give them stretch goals, to challenge them, to give them a chance to grow. So there's a ton of Drucker in the book as well. And it's just super practical. Every chapter ends with, in homage to Peter Drucker, who famously said, "Don't tell me what a great meeting you had. Tell me what you can do differently on Monday." So I have a Monday morning list. So after every chapter, there's a list of 5 things to do on Monday. And they're, I say these are all experiments. No one knows for sure if these principles, even though they've been worked out in lots of different companies, they worked out in my laboratory, if they'll work in any particular organization, because every organization has its own little weird quirks. So they're just experiments. And if you pitch it to people you work with and say, "You know what, I read this book. We think it's going to be awesome if we move to 4 10-hour days instead of 5 8-hour days. We're going to try it for 6 months and see what you guys think. And you give us feedback. And if that helps marshal your energy so that, you know, you can do your other crap you need to do on a Friday or whatever and not take off of work, you know, I want you to be all in." So, for example, I talk about this in the book, you know, the importance of sleep has just really been shown clearly from a neurologic perspective. In a bunch of companies use something called Firm 40. That is, office opens at 8, at 5 o'clock, at 5:05, the parking lot should be empty. I want you to be full bore for 8 hours and then get the hell out and take a rest, see your family, go recreate, whatever you want to do. Versus places I've worked, for example, where, you know, the boss is late for 8 p.m. And yeah, you screw around during the day because, you know, you're working a 12-hour day and you got to, you know, whatever, get your laundry or go on Facebook or whatever people do at work. So, you know, I want people to be in 100% or as close to 100% as I can, you know, and culture is a way to do that, to set up these social norms where people are challenged and can respond with their best selves.
There was a recent HBR article that talked about, I think it was something about how people who worked more than 40 hours a week actually started at some point to become less productive than people who just worked 40 hours, which I thought was really interesting. But I also love your perspective as viewing everything as an experiment and then just trying it out. I think that's a great framework for implementing any change in your life and especially in changes in a business. But I think that's a really insightful way to view all of these potential strategies.
Yeah, I think so. And I think if you're honest with people that you work with, by the way, I don't like the word worker or employee. I never use that, colleague or teammate. If you talk to your colleagues and say, "Hey, you know what? We did a survey and we found that, you know, the culture isn't as good as we'd like it to be. And we're going to try a couple of new things for 6 months or 12 months. It's an experiment. We think it's going to be awesome for you guys. And if it's not, look, we'll try something else. We just want to make your time here as engaging, as valuable to you as possible. If it's valuable to you, it's going to improve the performance of the company." I have to suppress the name of this company, but we did a kickoff of a. So again, once you have the data, you can intervene. So we've created culture interventions for companies to use. And I did a kickoff at a company recently, and I was talking to the employees, and I said, "Look, you may not think this is going to make your work life better, but please give it a try. You're going to get some little animated videos. We're going to ask you some questions. We're going to do this for 60 days, which is what about it takes to change a habit. So it's basically about habit change, to change the way you interact with people at work. But guess what? If you actually try to change your behavior, it'll improve your home life as well, because all these behaviors are good for all the humans around you. So if you want to be happier at home, if you want your relationship, your romantic relationship to be better, if you want your kids to be performing better and your workmates, you know, to be a more effective teammates to you, here are some behaviors you can do to make that happen." So, it's got to be like a win-win space, right? If it's like so many times at work, right, you know there's some initiative to change something and employees get it right away, right? It's, "You want to pay me the same and get me to work harder," right? That doesn't sound like a good win for anybody. But if we're in this world in which labor does not provide this utility, in which I have an integration with my work and life, you know, I'm working from home, I'm working remotely, I'm doing stuff I think is super cool, I get choice over the kind of assignments I take, then you can, you know, if I'm a good leader, I can help to focus your energy and passion on stuff that you really enjoy doing. And if you do that with a group of people that you can rely on, that you can trust, boom, then you're in high gear. And it's just super exciting.
So tell me, let's dig in a little bit. I want to hear some of these building blocks. Tell me about the various different building blocks that you specifically recommend to kind of integrate trust into a company and help develop high performance.
Great. I'd be happy to. And somehow, Matt, as you know, magically, they spell out the acronym oxytocin. So I don't know how that happened, but I'll list them and then I'll just discuss one or two briefly. So the oxytocin acronym stands for ovation, expectation, yield, transfer, openness, caring, invest, and natural. Really quickly, ovation is recognizing the highest performers. Yield is crowdsourcing processes by delegating responsibility. Oh, I left out the E, sorry. The X is for expectation, which is designing challenges for people at work. The T is for transfer, which is enabling self-management. O is for openness, which is reducing stress by being clear about what the company is doing and why. C is for caring, which is intentionally building relationships with people at work. The I is for invest, which is helping colleagues grow personally and professionally. And the last letter, N, is for natural, which is being your authentic self at work, and including being vulnerable. So some of these things people have happened across, because we've tried everything at work in the last 500 years. But what I like is that the neuroscience my lab has done and other labs have done show you how to implement these culture changes to get the biggest impact on brain and behavior. So let's take the first one, ovation. So recognizing high performers. Hey, that's not new. Yeah, but what's the science say about this? When recognition comes from peers, when it's close to when the goal is met, when it's unexpected, when it's tangible, when it's public, all those things reinforce the importance of achieving high performance within this community that we call work. So when my community members go, Matt, you killed it. You worked on this project for 3 months. Your team was just killing it. You thrilled the client. You hit this these milestones, you know, under budget, on time. Everybody's thrilled. We as a community want to recognize you. So we're going to give your whole team a trip to Disney World. So you guys are going to take 3 days off. We're going to send you down to Orlando. Knock yourselves out. You guys just killed it, and we're thrilled to have you be part of our team. So because the number of high performers in the world is, in fact, limited, I want the best people not only at my work, but performing at their best. And so doing things like recognizing tangibly people who are just knocking it out of the park is a way to say, it's not about money. You got to pay people fairly, for sure. It's about doing stuff that's super cool in a community that values that. So that's just one example. And the book has many, many more examples for all these components on how to create really high engagement by essentially tapping into intrinsic motivation.
I'd love to dig into the power of vulnerability as well, and hear some strategies you'd recommend for how to bring that into the workplace, or maybe how listeners could potentially bring that to a workplace, even if they're not necessarily a manager.
Yeah, I mean, all this applies to people at any level of the organization, from the lowest level. And in the book, I spent a lot of time talking about how even entry-level people at work can do amazing things with their work team and for the organization. Yeah, so the last component I call natural, which is just be yourself at work, right? So if you have to put on some kind of mask, that your work persona, that's just extra wasted energy that doesn't go into performing at the highest levels. And it turns out many experiments have shown that people who come off as too perfect, too beautiful, we kind of hate those people. So yeah, I'm talking about Austin again. So if you show that you don't know everything, if you ask for help from people around you, if you let your imperfection show, it turns out that induces oxytocin release, and people want to help you. If I say, look, Matt, you know, we got this big project. Our client wants to do machine learning on this data set we're collecting for them. I read about machine learning. I don't know how to do it, but I know you do. Can you help me out? I really need like 2 weeks of your work life to do this machine learning thing. And teach me about it, right? I want to learn from you. Even though if I'm the boss, I don't know how to do everything, for sure. That's why we have an organization. That's why people specialize. So just being who you are, letting your work show, it's okay. So we actually trust people more who let their imperfections show. So it's okay to be imperfect and then ask for help.
What's another one of these that you think would be really relevant for our listeners, and maybe something that they, you know, as a concrete one of these strategies that they could really benefit from understanding?
I'll do one more. The caring component is, you know, straight down the trust building oxytocin runway. And, you know, sometimes, at least when I was in business school, you know, they sort of had this implicit or explicit statement that, you know, don't fraternize with the people you work with. They won't respect you. You don't want to be friends with people at work. But again, our brains are built to form connections. So if you're at work and you're not forming connections, again, you're inhibiting your natural responses, and you're not going to be able to, you know, have strong relationships and count on people, trust people to do what you need them to do, particularly in crunch times. So one way you can intentionally build relationships is to articulate the emotions you see in others. So normally when you walk in work, you say, "Hey, Matt, how are you? Good. How are you? Good." I might go as far as to say, "How was your weekend?" "Oh, it was great. Fine. Whatever." But if you replace that, "Hey, what's going on," with the emotion you see in that person's face, then you have a much different conversation. So Matt walks in the office and I say, "Hey, Matt, you look tired, happy, sad, joyful, worried." Then we have a whole different conversation. "So why do you look so worried today?" "You know what? My wife's been really sick. You know, we went to the doctor last week, and it looks like it's something really bad." "Okay, let's talk about that. So how do we now modulate your work-life relationship, right? Do you need to be at work today? Should you take some time off? Is your team working effectively?" So once you actually can recognize the emotions in others, and if you just articulate them, it's like a booster to build relationships with them. And other things, like in my lab, I have a lot of graduate students. So I buy beer out of my own pocket every month. So I think the beer budget is the best money I spend, because we have a nice patio behind our lab. You're done with work and you want to have some beers and hang out with the people you work with. Awesome. Build that relationship.
I think it's so vital. And I mean, it underpins all of the research that you've worked on over the last, you know, however long, 20 years or however long. But I think that this, just fundamentally, it's about building relationships, right? And oxytocin underpins much of that. But at the end of the day, if you care about people, if you invest in them, and you really genuinely want to develop relationships with them, it yields tremendous benefits for yourself, sort of at a biological neurochemical level, but also in the results you see in your life and in the results you see in your workplace as well.
Yeah. And I think, you know, Peter Drucker said that every knowledge worker, which to me is everybody now, needs to be their own CEO. So if you're your own CEO, and I'm in an organization that treats me like crap, dude, I got skills. I can go elsewhere. So I'd rather, you know, have you have a lot of say over your career, to give you opportunities to grow, to have you be in a place that recognizes the amazing things that people do every day at work. So yeah, I want those people with me. And I should say, you know, I always keep my scientist hat on, Matt. So I'm always skeptical of anything I do. So that's why I spent 8 years doing this work before writing the book. So we, you know, we looked at, you know, all the business outcome measures we could capture, like energy at work and chronic stress and productivity and retention. All those things, trust substantially improves. So even objective measures like sick days or life satisfaction, if people work in high trust organizations take fewer sick days, and they're more satisfied with their lives outside of work. Because when you come home, instead of being beaten down by some, sorry, bad word, asshole boss, you know, you've been working with people who respect you, who value you. And if you're doing something cool for the world at the same time, you're energized when you come home. Yeah, you're a nicer person to be around. So, you know, that's the world that we can create at work, which, you know, improves employees' lives, improves organizational performance, and really strengthens societies by focusing on relationships.
And you know, we've touched on it, but we haven't even really hammered home this point, which the fundamental thing that underpins all of these all of this high performance is trust itself, right? And we've talked a little bit about, and talked a lot about, oxytocin and how that helps build trust, but it's really all about trust fundamentally. And once you're able to cultivate that using these various strategies that you recommended, that's how you yield these incredible dividends.
Yeah, yes and no. I want to push that a little further. I think it's really about relationships. So, you know, there are almost no humans that can survive on their own. There must be some hermit living in some mountain somewhere, but it's extraordinarily rare. So we only survive in groups. If we survive in groups, then we've got to understand how to engage the groups of people that we're always around, right? We're in many different groups over the course of our day or week or life. And again, I'm just a really super boring person, and I just want to make the groups I'm in and my own performance better, because for some reason I'm obsessed with performance. But the nice thing is the science predicts and our data strongly support that when you're in a high performance group, you enjoy what you're doing a hell of a lot more. So, you know, there's been a lot of focus on, you know, happiness at work and giving employees, I don't know, Taco Tuesdays or something. And that's not what the science shows. It shows if you're doing something important for the planet, which I call purpose, if you know your organization's purpose and you're doing it with people that you trust, that you can rely on, that treat you well and you treat well, now you're in high gear and now you are making a dent in the universe. And it's that really that joy, that satisfaction of doing something important with people that you trust. So it's really about relationships. And I think, you know, for guys in particular, you know, we don't spend a lot of time thinking about building relationships when we're younger, partially because of testosterone, partially because, you know, we're more aggressive than older guys are and than women are in general. So I guess this is a bit of a call to say the relationships matter a ton. I always want, you know, I want the 3 a.m. friend. You know, this is a guy that you can call up at 3 a.m. and say, don't ask questions, just bring a couple of shovels and some lye. Something bad went down. I want a couple guys like that in my life who just, they don't ask, they'll just show up at 3 in the morning and help you fix some nasty problem. So in the best case, I like a 3 a.m. employee. I'd like to have an employee, not that I can call my house at 3 a.m., but, you know, occasionally emails me at 3 a.m. going, hey, Paul, you know this problem we worked on for a month? It just came to me. Like, I couldn't sleep tonight. I fixed this damn thing that's been bugging us, that's been holding down our performance. So you can't pay people to do that. You have to love what you're doing. You have to care about the people you do it with. So anyway, that's my claim, at least. Relationships matter.
And I love the phrase that you use. I forget if it's on the cover of the book or not, but that why isn't work an adventure?
Yeah. You know, we always want adventures. And certainly if you look at, you know, the way the world's evolving in terms of business, which is, you know, people will pay for experiences. They'll pay a lot of money for experiences. Why is that experience only for the customer? Why are the employees not having that experience? So I think work should be an adventure. You know, not every second of the day, maybe. There's still some stuff, you know, still got to clean up the floors or whatever you got to do. But I don't know. What about you, Matt? Isn't your work an adventure most of the time?
No, most definitely. Yeah. I mean, as you said, even adventures have, you know, boring parts potentially. But yeah, I try to make every single day an adventure. Absolutely.
And you can't do that by yourself, right? Because you've got to work with a team. And so I think empowering the people around you to have cool ass adventures, you know, is, I don't know, man, that's a true leader. I think when I'm helping the people around me be successful and allowing them to create adventures for themselves, what could be better than that?
So what would be kind of one piece of homework or actionable advice that you would give to somebody listening to this podcast that they could use to either implement some of the strategies we've talked about to make their lives more of an adventure or to build trust relationships and develop kind of more oxytocin, I guess, in their lives?
Well, that's a broad question. So I could do that at work or at home. Let's do it at home. It all holds over. Again, I don't think there's any, for most of us, there's no hard line between work and home anyway. So oxytocin is a really, really interesting and ancient molecule. And it's very difficult or perhaps impossible to have to make your brain make it yourself. But you can give that gift of oxytocin release to others by connecting to them, touching them, giving them a gift. And almost always when their brains make oxytocin, they want to reciprocate and give you the same thing. So if we think about the best social behaviors, it's really about giving the gift of connection, of empowerment, of love, of whatever that person around you really needs. Think of this as effective social behaviors are service behaviors. I want to serve the people around me. And so I try to end every conversation with the word service. I'll do that with you, Matt. So Matt, I want to be of service to you. It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. And I hope that we find a way to do something in the future. So I want to put myself out there and say, when you've got an idea, when you've got a crazy neuroscience question, when you're something you're doing, I want to continue to be of service to you. And I think if I end every conversation with service, then I want to engage with the people around me. And it turns out that if you serve other people, that comes back to you manyfold. And if it doesn't, that's okay, because I still feel good helping other people. So think about being of service to the people around you, as opposed to what's in it for me. Think about what I can do to make you happier, perform better. I don't know. I think that's a pretty good way to go through life.
What a great idea and what a great framework. And I'm pretty sure I felt a little boost of oxytocin when you said that.
Bingo. We're in good shape now.
Exactly. But I mean, it reminds me of the old, and I don't even, it's probably before him, but Zig Ziglar quote, you know, you can have anything you want in life if you help enough other people get what they want.
Man, it's so true, isn't it?
Well, so, you know, I'll do a small act of service for you. For listeners who want to dig in more, where can they find you and find the book online?
All your online sellers, Amazon, Kindle, Audible, Habits, Trust Factor, the Science of Creating High Performance Companies. The company we've spun off to do that work is ofactor.com, O-F-A-C-T-O-R.com. Lots of free tools and assessments there that you can use. And you can find out more about me at pauljzak.com. So reach out, listeners. Let me know what I can do to help you.
Well, Paul, thank you so much for coming on the show, sharing all of this incredible wisdom. Your work and research is fascinating, and there's so many relevant conclusions for everybody. So thank you again. Thank you so much for listening to The Science of Success. We created the show to help you, our listeners, master evidence-based growth. I love hearing from listeners. If you want to reach out, share your story, or just say hi, shoot me an email. My email is matt@successpodcast.com. That's matt@successpodcast.com. I'd love to hear from you, and I read and respond to every listener email. I'm going to give you three reasons why you should join our email list today by going to successpodcast.com and signing up right on the homepage. First, you're going to get exclusive curated weekly emails from us every single week, our Mindset Monday email, with which listeners have been loving. Next, you're going to get a listener exclusive chance to shape the show, vote on guests, submit your own personal questions to our guests, vote on new intro music, and all kinds of ways to interact with the show. And lastly, you're going to get an awesome free guide we created based on listener demand called How to Organize and Remember Everything. You can get it completely for free, along with another surprise bonus guide, which is equally as awesome, by joining the email list. You can go to successpodcast.com, sign up right on the homepage, or if you're on the go, if you're on the move right now, just text the word SMARTER to the number 44222. Remember, the greatest compliment you can give us is a referral to a friend, either live or online. If you've enjoyed this episode, please leave us an awesome review and subscribe on iTunes. That helps more and more people discover the science of success. Don't forget, if you want to get all the incredible information we talked about in this episode, links, transcripts, everything we discussed, and much more, be sure to check out our show notes. You can get them at successpodcast.com. Just hit the show notes button right at the top. Thanks again, and we'll see you on the next episode of The Science of Success.
How powerful is Cox Internet? Powerful enough to let your band members in Vegas, Phoenix, and Rhode Island jam like you're all in the same garage. Get gig speeds powered by fiber from Cox. It's internet built for tomorrow, today. Cox, always building better. Download speeds up to 1 gigabit per second. Cox Internet is connected to the premises via coaxial connection. Speeds vary and are not guaranteed. Cox terms and other restrictions may apply.